Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what it do, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Tonight we got a hot show for you. The last couple weeks, man, we've been jamming in a lot of topics. Last week we forgot a topic, but we're gonna cover it today. Before we jump into anything, what's up, my man Keys? What's going on, bro? Yo, Keys. Oh, okay, I heard you now.
Yeah, we good?
Yeah, we good. What's up with you, bro? How you doing?
All right. I was just making sure I was in here. All right, cool. I thought I was still on the queue. That sound good?
Yeah, you sound good, bro.
Oh, man, I'm just eating dinner right now, bro, just in time.
Yeah, man, you know, I was telling the people that we've been talking about a lot of topics here lately, and last week we forgot to cover one, but we're going to get into it today. But, yeah, I had to eat too, man. I came home today because I forgot to pack me a lunch today, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm starving. So, yeah, I'm ready to go now.
Can't be working through lunch, dog. Every day I do that, it has me all thrown off bad. That's a recipe for a bad one. I can't be skipping out of lunch, dog, or dinner. We've had some rough shows from Katie's not eating dinner, y'all. You know that. I've had some rough moments off not eating dinner, man. We know that damn well.
But look, man, let's jump into it. Last week we talked about a lot of stuff, and we forgot to talk about the Woodley Paul fight, which was actually a pretty good fight. They had Jake winning by unanimous split decision. I'm sorry, but you know, let's talk about it, man. What did you think about the fight?
So this is one thing that I wanted to say. This is one thing I want to say is that, you know, I'm proud of Woodley, man. I'm proud of him. You know, I think that it's, you know, when I was making breakfast early today, because, like, y'all know I work from home, so, like, I was making breakfast, and, I'm able to listen to some stuff, you know, and I was listening to Dan Hardy did an interview. It seemed like Dan Hardy's, like, kind of changed his, he's no longer, you know, He kind of getting to like the fighter personality again, not really. But anyways, you'd have to go look at it to understand it. But he was basically calling out Woodley and saying that, you know, he missed his shot and all this. And I don't know. You have to go look at what he said. I don't even know what he was talking about. But either way, you know, Dan Hardy was saying some stuff about it. And, you know, a lot of people have been saying stuff about it. And I just say this. Y'all know this is the T-Wood fan club. I'm going to keep it short. You know, y'all know it's the T-Wood fan club. You could probably expect me to have something good to say about my boy, but he's my boy, so you should expect me to have something good to say. And I do have something good to say, and I'm going to say this, that he had – I want to say I saw a statistic come out that shows that my boy threw more in that fight than he did in, I think, his last four fights combined. I think there was a stat that came out that said that. And if you look at the stats of all those fights, you know, he was letting his hands go a lot more in that fight than he did in his last four. And I want to say if you combine them, it might have been more than all four of them combined. So, and I know it's boxing, and yeah, you might be bound to throw your hands more than in MMA, but it don't really matter to me because at the same time, we're talking about a Woodley that was very, you know, he had stage fright in there. He looked like he was scared to let his hands go in those last couple fights. So the way he came out there I would have liked to have seen, you know, a bit more output from him. I still think he could have thrown more. I still think he could have knocked Jake Paul out, you know, 100%. I think if he would have, you know, I think if he would have capitalized on that huge shot that he landed that basically put Jake through the ropes, I think if he would have let him, not in the split second, because it is a boxing match, you can't just, jump on top of him like if it was UFC. You know, if that was UFC, Jake would have, that would have been, he would have fell, that would have been a knockdown, and I would have expected Woodley to jump on top of him and finish the fight if that was MMA. But where he had the ropes to hold him and catch his fall, I still think Woodley should have let him bounce back off the ropes and then get and then close the distance and get right there and capitalize, because he was definitely hurt. That's one thing that I didn't really understand is why he didn't take that kind of stance. Instead, he kind of looked, he kind of looked shocked in that moment, like he didn't really expect. I don't know what he thought happened, but I would have liked him to capitalize on that because Jake was definitely hurt. But overall, I'm proud of him. You know, everybody's hating on him and stuff like this, and you know, hemming and hawing or whatever they're saying. But I'm proud of my boy. I'm happy with his performance. I don't really care, you know, whether they do a rematch or not. It's whatever. I mean, that's really not even the focus. I'm just happy that, you know, with the performance he had. You know, I think he could do better, you know, in a rematch. I think if he boxes again, he could do better. I definitely would. If he boxes again, I definitely expect, you know, that he'll be making improvements and having a better performance than that. But, you know, either way, for the first boxing fight, that's definitely, you know, a good performance if you ask me. And I'm happy with, you know, the changes that he's made. He looked different in there to me, I think. That's what I think.
I thought he looked good, too. But once again, it came down to lack of output in the first two rounds. He threw 6 punches in the first round, 8 punches in the second round. You say if he come out in any one of those two rounds and actually do something, there's a possibility that we have a split decision or a majority draw or something like that. But that slow start really hurt him. And me watching the fight, I was like, come on, Tyron, let your hands go. I understand the first round is known as a fill-out round, but that's a fill-out round for your opponent too. So, you know, he probably could have stole that round with a little bit more output, but he didn't. I thought that the one where he hurt Jake, I feel like that should have been considered a knockdown because the ropes actually saved Jake, because he would have been on his back, or at least on his ass. So, but outside of that, it was an entertaining fight, you know, like we thought it would be. But once again, it goes back to Woodley's slow starts. Even if we go back to his last couple fights in the UFC, they've all been slow starts. But like you said, he did let his hands go. But in boxing, you have to. Boxing is a one-discipline sport. And you don't got to worry about nobody taking you down. You got to worry about nobody kicking you. Only thing you're doing is throwing punches. So, I don't know. He probably get another fight. You know, they probably match him up against somebody else because of the way how good he did against Jake. But I'm tired of Jake fighting, you know, athletes and celebrities. It's time for him to have a real fight. I know on our last show I said I think Conor's first fight back would be against Jake, but I think Jake's next fight would be against Tyson Fury's brother. I think that's the fight all the fans are asking for. They want him to fight a real boxer, and it's time for him to do that. If he want us to take him seriously about him fighting Canelo in like 2 years. So hats off to Woodley for a good performance, an inspired performance. But I think if Floyd Mayweather was in his corner, he would have won that fight. I think Floyd would have lit a fire under him after that first round, saying, hey, man, let's go. Floyd would have excited him, motivated him to let his hands go to get into the fight. And that was one thing I really wanted was Floyd to be in his corner. And everybody know that listen to this show, I'm not a Floyd Mayweather. I'm not a fan of the man Floyd Mayweather. But his boxing and knowledge of boxing is second to none. And I think he would have definitely motivated Woodley probably to heights that Willie probably didn't know he could get to in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would have liked to have seen that as well. You know, that's one thing that is true is that, I mean, you know a lot more about boxing than I do, and you know Floyd a lot better than I do. I am aware of your stance versus Floyd the man versus Floyd the pugilist. I know that part. I'm saying as far as his fights, you've definitely watched more of his fights, so you understand the mind that he brings to the game probably more than me. But at the same time, you know, regardless of that, I definitely think that Floyd being in Woodley's corner would have been a huge difference there. I mean, it's like when you're doing something and somebody's there to coach you. Like, I'm not even talking about fighting, but, like, it just changes
anything.
Right away. It changes
yep.
right away because – and it's not like, oh, you have a coach, you know, that is giving you tips. Like, you're going to call them on the phone and you say, oh, what should I – no, it's like not like a life coach. Talking about, like, a coach that's right there watching you do something and it is on your ass about doing it well. Like, for example – I remember I was playing something. I might have been playing a video game. I might have been gaming. I want to say I was gaming. I forget what game I played, but when I was getting coached through it, I had. You know, my performance improved. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, I can second that opinion that you're saying, Keys. And this is a real life story. I was playing JV basketball. And basically, I was getting playing time, and then all of a sudden, I wasn't playing. So we was playing Woodrow Wilson High School, which ended up being the high school I graduated from. We was playing a JV team, and they were undefeated as well. So with about 2 minutes left in the game, one of our guards fouled out, and coach put me in. But before he put me in, he was like, you know, they're going to start fouling. I want you to go to the free throw line. He was like, don't run from the ball. Don't run from the moment. Go to the free throw line, shoot them like you shoot them in practice. So probably with about a minute and a half left, they miss a shot. The big man get the rebound. I run to the ball. They foul me. I go to the free throw line. I hit 2 free throws. So they come down. They score. So we take the ball out, and I get the ball again, and I hit 2 free throws. And the coach was like, the other team coach called timeout. Coach came to me. He was like, you got this. So I went to the free throw line, knocked down 2 more free throws, and we ended up winning the game. But I totally agree with you. When you getting coached up and your coach is showing that fire or being calm to calm you down, it does improve your performance. And I think Floyd being in his corner would have definitely improved his performance. And I really wanted Floyd to be there for Tyron. But, you know, maybe they had worked that out where he wouldn't be there. But I think it would have made a hell of a difference. I think Woodley would have fought better. And he probably would have had a little bit more confidence, too. So, but, you know, back to what you were saying. Go ahead, bro.
My bad, y'all. My neighbor was knocking at my door. So what I was saying was that I remember, I don't think I was gaming. I think I was playing a video game. I forget what game it was, but there was something. I think I was playing online. Something I was struggling with, you know. And playing at a certain level, you know, and, you know, I forget who it was, but I had somebody that was thin, maybe like one of my brother's friends or something like that. But, yeah, he was standing over my shoulder, and he was, like, you know, kind of coaching me through every moment. And while he was there doing that, like, my performance was so much better in that particular game. As soon as he left, you know, I kind of regressed, or I don't know what would be the best word to use, but I kind of went back to, you know, where my level would be where, you know, when he wasn't there. But, you know, that was just one time. That was, like, 5 minutes. But I just think that, you know, that's only one example, but there's tons of examples of that. I just think that it's when you have somebody pushing you in the moment, it's like you're on a, you know, I'm bench pressing in the gym, and my cousin or whoever's there spotting me. You have somebody spotting you in the gym, it's gonna reinforce the thoughts that it's gonna put thoughts to fight against the thoughts you're already having, you know, and that's. I think that's something that and also the strategy. So the strategy, you know, Woodley's corner was probably saying, okay, I think we should do this, or we should, you know, try to neutralize the jab or whatever they were trying to do, you know, in that fight in the moment. But I think, you know, Mayweather being there, you know, I think if Mayweather and his camp were all there, or if his entourage was at the fight, I mean, Woodley would have fought like he was on top of the world. I mean, because you pretty much are. You have the best backing that you could possibly have. You have people there that all have full confidence in you. You know what I'm saying? So I think I think his supporting cast, just having them there, would have given him a ton of confidence without Floyd even saying a word. I think would have gave him a huge confidence boost in that fight, and I think he would have had more of an output, and he would have the confidence to take some of those shots that he held back from taking. Also, I think Floyd would have reinforced a lot of the thoughts he was having. So if he was having doubts in himself, you know, going into, you know, round six, round seven, you know, around that point, like, okay, I need to finish the fight. You know, I might be down on the cards. I need to finish the fight. Floyd, you know, I think would help him. And we know that. Floyd is somebody who will, you know, he's very good at doing that. He could take somebody down the stretch and then take them out, you know, get them out of there late in the fight. We saw him do it to Connor, so. You know, I think that would have been a huge difference maker if Floyd was at the fight. That's a great point. I wish that had gone that way.
Yeah, man. You coaching is very valuable. People might not think so, but I give you one example of good coaching. Stipe's second fight against DC. When Stipe's corner told him, go to the body. And Stipe came out in that round. And he started head hunting. Then once he went to the body, it was like his corner knew. I don't know whether or not they instinctively knew to go to the body or they just wanted to switch something up because the hand shots wasn't working. But, man, hey, coaching is invaluable, man, especially when it's good quality coaching. You know, we done seen bad coaching where I can't remember what fight it was, but the girl was getting beat up by Joanna. I want to say it was Joanna. She was getting beat up by, maybe it was Nunez. And her corner sent her back out there, and she didn't even have it. So she went out there getting pieced up again and again knocked out when her corner should have never sent her back out. So, you know, coaching can be good or bad, but for the most part, it's normally good. But, you know, man, something else came out this weekend. You know, the UFC had a fight card this weekend. And two things came out of that card. I'm quite sure you didn't watch the card because I know we were talking about it. Did you
watch it? I didn't watch it.
Well, the first thing that came out of the card, I guess one of the fighters suffered a dislocated knee due to an oblique kick. So Sunday and Saturday night, our timeline was blowing up, saying that the oblique kick should be outlawed, you know, whatever. I don't remember ever seeing anybody get injured by oblique kick to Saturday, even though I watched the highlights and I watched the post-fight show, but I didn't watch it in live. But I never seen anybody get hurt like that to an oblique kick. But do you think the oblique kick should be outlawed, Keys? That's that kick that John Jones throws.
So the obliques is your abs.
Right above the
knee. Abs?
Yeah, the one I might be saying it wrong. The one right above the knee.
Yeah, I don't. You're probably right. I don't really know what that is. So I've heard it before. I just never knew what part of the body that was. So obliques. So yeah, no, I don't think it should be banned. I mean, I think that, you know, part of me, it's just, you know, because this is why it shouldn't be banned, is because, you know, we were just saying that calf kicks should be banned, and I was on board with that at one point, but the more I look at it, it's like, okay, you kind of have to. I think there's a difference between banning something and fighters just trying not to, like, I think fighters could kind of be, I think they could kind of come up with like a, some kind of like advisory or some kind of like guideline, like, and kind of just let fighters know, like, we shouldn't be kicking each other, like, going for kill shots and like shots that, you know, are going to break bones. Like, I don't think that should be the object. You know, I think that's kind of messed up when you think about it. Like, it is MMA. I understand that fighting in a cage, but fighters know what kind of kicks are going to do what. You know what I'm saying? Like, the same way that, you know, people get hurt in the NFL, and then you see players going after that player's knee or whoever it was because they know he just came off an injury. And I, you know, me, that kind of stuff to me has always seemed kind of messed up. You know, the fact that that's kind of the mentality that players and that fighters have. You know that something is a weak point. You know that, you know, how their body's going to react to that. I mean, a punch, a shot in the liver is, I guess you could compare to that. But I mean, that's something that isn't going to take, you know, months and months off their career. You know what I'm saying? Like, a shot to the liver, they're going to recover from that, you know, in a day or whatever. That's something that is going to get better, you know, in most cases. Or however long, I don't know. I don't know the exact time. But I just think that there should be some kind of, like, advisory. Like, okay, how about, like, we don't go for kill shots? Like, you know that if you throw that kick, you know, you throw the calf kick in that style, like, or in that angle or on that side of the bone, like, that's an area, that's a very prone area for a break, you know. I think that there should be some kind of guidelines put in place to kind of not say you can't do it, but just try to, like, advise fighters to not do it, because it's not, I don't think that's the name of the game, you know what I'm saying? I don't think that's what MMA is supposed to be. Like, I say what you want, but I don't believe that, like, we're supposed to just be out here, like, trying to break each other's legs and stuff like that. That's kind of messed up to me, honestly. Like, yeah, you want to defeat your opponent, but I don't see, you know, too much pride in beating them because you broke one of their bones. Like, I don't think that's a great achievement. So that's kind of what I think. I don't think they should be banned, but I think, you know, with the calf kick story and the oblique kick story, you know, I think there should just be some kind of, like, guideline that comes out for fighters, like, to try to sway, try to move them away and just make them aware, like, we're really not trying to, you know, cause serious injuries like that. I think it's kind of whack, honestly. Like, it's kind of whack.
Yeah, I think the one Saturday was a freak accident because it's the first time I was seeing somebody really get hurt by that kick. And I want to say the reason he got hurt was because his foot was dead planted, so his knee basically took the whole point of that kick. Now, the last couple of injuries that happened with leg kicks, actually, I want to say Weidman was throwing a kick, and I want to say Connor had threw a kick, and that caused their serious injuries. It wasn't the person kicking them. It was them kicking the person. So, but at the same time, I think the injuries that are dirty are when you put somebody in an arm bar and they don't tap and you break their arm, I think that's dirty. To me, that's dirty. You don't have to snap their arm. You know, the referee is eventually going to call it about when he see the position of the arm. When you hold on to a submission too long after the ref tell you to break, stuff like that is dirty to me, and that's like you intending to hurt somebody. But, you know, kicks are so unpredictable that, you know, you really can't predict what they're going to do. I don't think most fighters going there saying, I'm going to kick this guy so hard, I'm going to break his leg. I don't think they do that. But at the same time, it's like when you fighters and you inside the cage, you are trying to win the fight. But at the same time, you got to look at that guy and that girl as a fighter and a person too. So, you know, I just think it goes both ways, man. Sometimes you got to look after your competitor when you in there. And, you know, and definitely you got to take care of yourself. But the one Saturday, that was kind of like a freak accident. But we're going to get to the main event, Brunson versus Till. I don't know whether or not you've seen this, but Michael Bisping put on Twitter that Darren Till has suffered an ACL injury in training. And my whole thing is this.
I did not see that, but go on.
Why would Darren Till step in the ring with basically one leg? To me, he could have got seriously injured when his body is already compromised. I think the UFC should fine Darren Till if he did come in there with an ACL tear. And something has to be, I thought the UFC gave these guys physicals before their fight. I mean, Brunson was dominating him with the wrestling like we thought he would, but Till just never looked good in there the whole fight. I think Derek Brunson's pressure and the threat of Derek Brunson taking him down. But if he came in there with a turn on ACL keys, man, come on, man. You hurting yourself and you hurting the sport, man. I just don't like that if that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know about that, so that's news to me. But, you know, if he did go in there with an ACL tear, that's pretty irresponsible. I mean, first of all, it's irresponsible to his own self. I mean, for him just endangering himself, I feel like he did a disservice to himself. Like, first and foremost, you know, because it's you're endangering yourself by doing that. So that's the first fault right there. And then two, I mean, it's also bad on the UFC that they didn't know about that and that they let him compete like that. So that's pretty much the two points to be made for me right there. You know, bad on Darren Till for putting himself in harm's way like that, knowing that, you know, he really wasn't fit to fight. You know, he should have been pulled from that fight, if we're being honest. And two, bad on the UFC if they didn't detect it, bad on them for not finding out, because they should have. Like you said, if they're running physicals on the fighters, they know who's fit to fight or who's not. We've seen it happen many times before. They find out, you know, whatever it is that you have. You sneeze and they think you have COVID. You can't pull from the fight. So how are you going to let a guy go unnoticed if he has an ACL tear? Like, that just seems kind of extreme. And then at the same time, it'd be even worse if they did know about it and they still let him fight. I mean, that'd be even worse. So I'm not going to assume that, but who knows? I don't know what the story is, but I think it's bad on both parties. That's pretty terrible.
Yeah, I just sent you a picture. I just screenshotted you a picture of the tweet and also what I retweeted back. But, man, it's a bad look. And, you know, man, and, you know, Darren Till is a fan favorite, you know, within the UFC, man. And damn, bro, it's just, I'm just glad he didn't get seriously injured in there and that, you know, he was somewhat able to walk away from the fight. So, yeah, man, it's just a bad look if it's true. On all parties.
Yes, yep.
On him, his camp, the UFC, UFC doctors, you know, maybe the commission that probably should have. I thought all the fighters had physicals before they got in, but it's just a bad look, man, overall, if it's true.
Yes, it's a super bad look. And you know, one thing that I want to add to that, it's kind of – it's related, but it's not related, is – I mean, I think in terms of the fight, we knew that – you know, I don't know if we even made predictions about that fight. I don't remember if we did or not, but
– yeah, you picked Brunson by a KO. You picked Brunson by KO, and I said Till by split decision upset.
All right, so, I mean, I definitely expected that Brunson's wrestling would be way too much for Darren Till. I don't remember if I said that in my prediction, but if I didn't, I should have. Blonde Brunson is a very skilled man. Ever since he dyed his hair blonde, he's been a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, some people might say, well, if you look at who he's fought during that time, you know, that would explain why he seems so good, even though he really hasn't fought anybody. I saw that take earlier today. But it really doesn't matter at the end of the day because it does matter, but it doesn't. It doesn't because he still looked overall, we don't have to speculate. He's still undefeated since he dyed his hair blonde. So that's first of all. And second of all is that a lot of the guys, if you look at who Brunson would lose to before, they were guys that had big knockout power. And if you look at the guys who he's been beating lately, they are guys who have big knockout power. You know, it's the same guys that it's the same style that he used to struggle with before. And that if you look at his losses on his record, I would bet that most of them are guys that have knockout power. Like Israel Adesanya, he couldn't, you know, he had trouble fighting him. And then I want to say Derek Brunson has lost to Jacare Souza. Jacare Souza, another guy with big knockout power. You know, those are just a couple names. I'm pretty sure he lost to Robert Whittaker, another guy with big knockout power. So those are just a few of his losses off the top. And I know there's more, but I can't think of the other ones. But, I mean, each of those guys, big knockout power. If you look at who he's been beating, all guys with big knockout power, Darren Till. Edmund Shabazin, another guy with big knockout power. He's beaten the same style of guys that he usually struggles with. So I think that is a big point that isn't being brought up when we're talking about Derek Brunson right now.
Yeah, I think Brunson has – I think when he was on that losing streak, Keys, I think he was trying to – he was pulling a John Jones. I'm going to try to beat these guys at what they do best. No, you don't know, especially if you're not as talented as a striker as they are. So he lost to Robert Whittaker by KO. I thought he beat Anderson Silva. That's just me. Lost to Jacare Souza by KO, and he lost to Israel Adesanya by KO. But then he beat Theodore Iron Heinisch, Edmund Shabazin, Kevin Harlan, and Darren Till. And he beat all those guys by going back to his bread and butter, his wrestling. And that guy, when he takes you down, it's almost like being in there with Khabib. Brunson is a beast on the mat. That's why when I predicted, I was like, I thought Till would have had an answer for the takedowns. Boy, was I wrong. Boy, was I wrong. He had no answer for the takedowns. So, you know, man, it is what it is. But, man, Brunson said he's willing to wait till next year for a title shot. How you feel about that?
Yeah, I just looked at that picture that you sent me with the MacLife article and the tweet that you put out. I did miss that, but thanks for sending that over. I mean, yeah, again, that's a bad on both of them for not doing the right thing, you know, in that with that situation and letting him fight and still choosing to fight. But what I think about Brunson waiting, you know, another year for a title shot. I mean, he just beat Darren Till, a guy that has only won, I believe, one fight in the middleweight division. It's really not that crazy. I mean, I understand. I'm pretty sure that's his fifth win in a row. But at the same time, Derek Brunson, like, you got to understand that there's guys that have had win streaks like that, and they had to keep going. Sometimes you have to keep going. Like, for example, Max Holloway, he had to keep going. Like, he probably might, you know, maybe he thought that, oh, when he gets 5-6 wins, okay, fight for the title, boom. But what ended up happening, Max Holloway had a fight, I want to say 10 fights. He had to win. He had to beat 10 guys to finally get the Aldo fight. And that's kind of wild if you think about it. And then another guy, Tony Ferguson, had a fight, I want to say 11 or 12 fights before. And he actually never really got the title fight, actually, if we're being real. But, you know, sometimes you got to just keep fighting. And, you know me, I'm never a proponent of guys sitting out for a title shot. But at the same time, you know, I was wrong with Oliveira when that just recently happened. You know, Oliveira wanted to wait out, you know, since December. And then he waited, I want to say, till like April, May, or was it June? I'm not sure when that card was. But he did wait, you know, the 4, 5, 6 months, whatever it was, for the title shot, which I had advised him not to do, and then he, you know, did it, and then it worked out, and now he's the world champion. So, you know, since I was wrong about that, I can't really front on Brunson waiting for a title shot, but, you know, generally,
yes, you
I don't
can,
like guys doing that.
Keys, yes, you can. You know why you can? Because I'm looking at the current rankings. He's number 4. Jared Cannonier is number 3. Paulo Costa is number 2. So, no, he's not going to get the next title shot. So he's got to either fight Paulo Costa, or Jared Cannonier. But I think those two guys are fighting each other, I think. So, no, he's not going to get a title shot, bro. Because he's not going to jump either one of them if they're fighting each other.
Yeah, I'm not really – I haven't really looked at the division enough to know what the situation is. I'm going to try to look that up and see if Paulo Costa is fighting Cannonier. I think that fight
I'm looking it up right now.
No qualms about it.
Yeah, man.
Well, it's over.
But look,
yeah,
man.
Okay, wait. It said they were booked to fight on August 21st. Obviously, that happened and they didn't fight. So what happened?
I don't know. But I see Paulo Costa.
Well, I don't know if it got rebooked
or
what's the deal with that. But I will say though. I mean, Paulo Costa hasn't fought. I'll say this. Derek Brunson definitely has more of a claim to the title than Paulo Costa does. I'll say that. Because Paulo Costa hasn't even fought. He literally got dominated when he fought for the belt. And he actually got that title shot off fighting nobody. He only fought Yoel Romero. That was pretty much the only tough guy that he fought. Everybody else was – we said that leading up to it, that who did he really fight besides Romero? And he looked good in that fight, I thought. But besides that, who did he really fight? And then basically it was like, okay, he got dominated. And then now if he fights Cannonier, what, he's going to win – let's just say he beats Cannonier, which I'm not even certain that he – beats Cannonier. I don't know who went. I don't have my prediction yet.
He's fighting Marvin Vettori, not Jared Cannonier. Cannonier just fought Gastelum.
Yeah, see, that's the part where you lose me, man, because I don't really I mean, as much as Brunson doesn't have a claim to the title, I don't really think either one of those guys have a claim to the title either, because Cannonier was lost, you know, to Whittaker. And then I think the next fight he has after that is this Gastelum fight. we all know Gastelum hasn't looked good in quite some time now. He's been losing left and right. So does a win over Gastelum, like, put you, you know, higher in the on the totem pole than a guy with a 5-5 win streak? And then Costa, you know, going to fight Marvin Vettori, who also just got dominated in probably one of the most snooze-fest title fights this year so far, or in the past year. So, I mean, I think both those guys don't really have a claim, Costa or Cannonier. Who's the number one guy? Who's number one at middleweight? Oh, Whitaker?
Billboard. Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, this is where the – okay. So, first of all, Whitaker, first of all, I forgot about this. Hold on. Y'all are crazy for this. So you really got me out here debating about these three guys. Whitaker has beat Derek Brunson, has beat Jared Cannonier, and he dominated Cannonier, so we're not even debating that. He absolutely dominated him. And Costa, I think they were supposed to fight at one point, but he actually didn't fight Costa. But he would dominate Costa too, so it's kind of crazy to me that I'm even sitting here debating these three knuckleheads when Whitaker should be getting the next shot. I know he's taking time off, but who cares, man? I think any one of those other fights is kind of looking sorry to me. If you're going to put Costa in there again, if he gets a win, that's kind of a sad fight. I don't even want to see that rematch. And you put Cannonier in there, I mean, who has he really fought to justify that? I think do Brunson versus Cannonier. I think we should just go against the grain and go with that one and then have Adesanya.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Because there's really no clear contender right now. Brunson's on a win streak, but, I mean, he's number four. So it depends how they want to go with that. I mean, if they do that fight, then, you know, I won't be mad at it. If they give him Brunson a title shot, I won't be mad at it. It is what it is, because Whitaker is spending time with his family. So, you know, if the UFC just wants to make a middleweight title fight, I would understand if they went with that. But if you're going to do it, that's the only guy. I mean, if you can't go with Cannonier, he fought nobody.
No.
Costa just came off getting demolished. So you pretty much can.
That's right.
I'm not dying for them to do the Brunson rematch, because Brunson also got folded when he fought Adesanya before. So I'm not dying to see it. But I do understand if they did do it just because of the situation. And he is on a win streak. He's the only guy on a win streak in the division. So I would understand it, but I'm not dying to see it.
Yeah. And I'm in the same boat as you. I know the next fight is Whitaker versus Adesanya. I know that is the next fight. I don't know when that fight is due to be booked. I'm thinking it's either going to be December or the first fight in January or on that January card. So that's a no-brainer. We know that fight is coming. But Brunson was saying he was going to wait and fight the winner. No, dog. You're not going to wait and fight the winner. You're number four. It's two dudes ahead of you. So, no, you're either going to fight Cannonier or you're going to fight Costa. There is no waiting. You still got probably one more fight to win before you get a title shot. So it is what it is. But look, man, we got to talk about this. UFC 266 is coming up. Man, I know we previewed the card, I think we previewed the card. We talked about it last week. But, bro, this card is going to be a banger. Man, I actually took a deep dive in it. We got Volkanovski Ortega, Shevchenko versus Murphy, Nick Diaz making his return against Lawler, Blaze against Rozenstrike, Andrade against Calvillo, which should be a good fight. And then we got all boy fighting Keys, Marab, Divashvili going against Marlon Moraes. Dan Hooker is on this card. I really don't care. You know, I'm not a fan of his. And then we got This card is actually pretty nice, man.
Is that
so
the
which
one
fight
that's
on
next
this card?
Weekend?
That's the one that's on September 25th.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. So that's 266.
Yep.
Yeah, that's 266. So I'm gonna pull up the card on my phone right quick too. Okay, so Volkanovski Ortega. Okay, so first of all, we're not doing predictions yet. Hold on. Let me get
no, we're just talking about the card. Yeah, we're just talking about the fight.
We'll do predictions next week or after.
We'll do it the Wednesday before the fight. I want to say that's in 2 weeks. Cause
it's not
what,
next
the
week, right?
Nah.
Yeah, I don't know what today is.
So, yeah, today is the 8th.
All I know
so
is...
So we got like 2 weeks.
My guy Volkanovski went bald for this fight. I'm just going to say that right now.
So we're going to have bald Volkanovski versus bald Ortega?
No. Ortega grew his hair back out. He's back to the slick back style
Carlos?
That he had before. Huh? It's a good look for him. They don't have the... They don't have the proper – they don't have the current in the flyer. Volkanovski's actually bald. I saw him on video. I mean, that was like a week or two ago. I mean, his hair might have a little bit there, but he went like full bald. He went all the way. So, like, he went down to – I don't know if that's what that is. But he is hero or what is it? He went full bald. So, yeah, I think Volkanovski knows that Bald Ortega was like a super saiyan. So Volkanovski's trying to go bald, trying to go super singing on him, and I think that's what's gonna happen, man. I'm not trying to give a prediction, but I'm just telling y'all, bald Volkanovski's coming in, man. He's coming in strong.
Yeah, man. I think the fight that I'm interested in, and I think you're gonna grill me. I like Morad Divashvili, man. Going against Marlon Moraes. I think Marlon is on a down. He's been basically on a downswing since he lost that fight against, I want to say Volkanovski or against, let me see who he lost to. He lost to Henry Cejudo, actually. He's been kind of in a tailspin because he lost to Cejudo, had a questionable victory over Aldo. Lost to Sanhagen, lost to Rob Font. And basically all three of those losses.
On that. Ooh.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I wasn't aware of this, man. I wasn't aware of this. I wasn't aware of this. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't. I would have said something by now.
Yeah, so Marlon Moraes has been knocked out in three of his last four fights. And, man, he fighting a beast in Morab. So... That's the fight.
Yeah,
Marlon
Moraes
I can't
and
Morab, wait to see.
That's a good fight, man. That's a good fight.
Yeah,
you know that's
the prelim main event.
Yeah, that's the fight I'm looking at, man. So without a doubt, I'm not even. I mean, there's some other good scraps on the card. My boy Carl Robertson is on the early prelims. I do like watching his fight.
Yep, I see that.
I do like watching his fight, so I got my eye on that one. I like Carl Robertson as my guy. So. Prelims, yeah, definitely. Morab and Moraes is Moraes and Morab is a banger of a fight. That's an absolute banger. So I'm definitely excited with that one. I think Chris Dawkins is like a upcoming heavyweight. He's a -180 favorite, so I think that's interesting. I feel like I've seen him fight before, but I don't really remember it. So I think that's an interesting fight right there. It's nice to see some heavyweights starting to come up. They need some more talent in the heavyweight division, so that's cool. But yeah, Moraes and Merab is crazy. And then the dude Nasrat that Hooker is fighting looks like Gastelum.
Okay, yeah, it sure does.
Yeah, isn't that kind of crazy, man? I really thought that was Gastelum. I was like, damn, Gastelum's a lightweight now.
Yeah, so I
you
guess it's the one down Hooker.
It makes sense.
I guess they throwing Dan Hooker a bone in that fight.
You fighting that lightweight, bro. Gaslam, I ain't trying to call you fat, man, but you're a little too big for lightweight, dog. Come on. You might have a little advantage fighting down there. Gaslam might be knocking those dudes out left and right, man. His power might be a little too much if he went down. But he might be too drained, too. But maybe that's Nasrat. Maybe that is a Gaslam. He just He's going under a new name.
Yeah,
I'm
man.
I'm sure you got Nasrat winning that fight, though.
I don't know. I think they're throwing Dan Hooker a bone. I think they're trying to, you know, probably this might be favorable. This might be a favorable matchup for Dan Hooker, bro. This might be a fight they feel that he should win. So
I think they're trying to get
know,
him to win.
Yeah, you know. So we'll see what happens. But I think another fight that I think is a make or break fight is Curtis Blaydes versus Rozenstruik. I think Rozenstruik has been exposed as a one-trick pony. And if he can't get that one trick off, he actually looks really bad in fights. And I think Curtis Blaydes is definitely the wrong guy at the wrong time for Rozenstruik. Because we all know Blaydes can take you down, keep you down, and ground and pound with the best of them. So I want to see what Blaydes look like in this fight going against another heavy hitter. Because, you know, Blaydes, I want to say his last fight was against Derrick Lewis, where he got that little – I thought he got a Lewis hitter with a lucky punch, but he still got knocked out. And Rozenstruik has the same kind of power. So I want to see how Blaydes bounce back in this fight.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that you have both Merab, my guy Merab and Blaydes are both on this card, man. I'm pretty happy about that. And they're pretty much almost fighting back-to-back. You know, you have prelim main event, and then you're going to have Andrade and Calvillo fighting, and then you'll have Blaydes dominating Rozenstruik. So you pretty much have that back-to-back. So, you know, both my boys are going to win. They're both going to have spectacular performances, you know, 2-0. It's going to be a great night. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think this card is a nice card. Definitely got some up and comers in this card that I'm gonna have my eye on because me and you are both big fans of Merab. My boy Nick Diaz is coming back. I'm excited about that. You know, and they gave him a favorable.
You know, that's something I wanted to ask you about. You know, while I think that Blaydes, to close out on that thought, you know, while I think that Blaydes is going to play this fight a bit more conservatively, I think he'll, you know, I don't think he'll put himself in the line of fire as much. I actually didn't even see – I only saw, like, the finishing sequence from that fight when he fought Lewis. I wasn't really in the room when that fight came on. But, you know, I saw the finishing sequence, and, you know, I just think that was – it's just, you know, it's like most Derrick Lewis fights. He just lands that big shot out of nowhere, and that's pretty much usually how he wins, you know, if he does win. So I think Blaydes will play that one more conservatively and get the W. I think Rozenstruik is very similar to Derrick Lewis. I think Rozenstruik throws – he's very similar. Him and Lewis are very similar fighters. They both fight kind of, from what I remember, flat-footed, and Rozenstruik really likes to wait and, like, pick his shots. I think Blaydes, though, will just play this one really conservatively. You'll see a lot of takedowns in this fight, and he'll just be dominating him on the mat and just landing a lot of, you know, ground strikes, and you'll just see. I think you'll see some stats put up from Curtis Blaydes in that fight. Nick Diaz, I wanted to ask you about that because how do you think he's going to look? I mean, I definitely think that, you know, Robbie Lawler is a -120 favorite. I definitely think that they threw Nick Diaz a matchup that he would get excited with. I think they threw him this one very much on purpose because Robbie Lawler is a guy that is kind of like relatively from Nick Diaz's era. And they're giving him a guy that he's familiar with, a guy that, you know, I'm pretty sure you said they fought before. So a guy he's fought before,
he fought
a fun fight. And, you know, because you give a guy a fun fight, you know, to come back to, a guy that he's familiar with, a guy, you know, he's going to get – that's a fight that's – fighting Robbie Lawler is a fight that's going to get, you know, both Diaz brothers amped about. You know, Nate Diaz would fight Robbie Lawler tomorrow if he could, you know. That's just a fun fight. Robbie Lawler is
is a brawler, and the Diaz is a brawler. So I think they gave him the perfect fight, you know, to come back with. I think it's a fight that he can win, but who knows how he's going to look where he hasn't fought in such a long time. How do you think he's going to look?
I'm with you. They definitely gave him a favorable matchup because we all know Robbie Lawler is not going to look to take him down or nothing like that. Robbie Lawler is a standing banger, and Nick, that's his style too. I think as long as the fight is on his feet, Nick has a good chance. But once again, I know me and you have said that ring rust probably isn't a thing anymore, but when was the last time Nick fought, bro? So getting in there on a big stage, on a big card, we shall see. But I think as long as Robbie stands up and trades with him, I think the longer the fight goes, the more Nick Diaz gains confidence and start letting his hands go. And he may start piecing Robbie Lawler up. I think this fight is a sleeper because of both of these guys have a knack to have action-packed fights. So the UFC definitely did Nick a favor in this fight by giving him a stand-up fight. So as long as it lives up to the billing, it should be a good fight.
Yeah,
I
definitely think this is a very winnable fight for Nick Diaz. I mean, Lawler hasn't looked too great, you know, in the past couple of years. I want to say Lawler might have won, like, one fight. I want to say he's won, like, one fight, possibly two, since he lost the belt. And I know he won a fight to Cowboy Cerrone. And I can't think of who else he's beaten. But I want to say he probably has one other win.
He's on a four-fight losing streak.
Yeah, so I think he only has, like, max two wins since he lost the bout, which is definitely not good. But he's just such a name that, you know, it really doesn't even matter. It's like he can just keep on coming out and getting these high-level fights. You know, if they didn't have two title fights on the card, these guys would probably be the co-main event. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, one last thing I wanted to ask you about, though. So I'm hearing that the Oliveira, King Oliveira, you know, the undisputed lightweight world champion, Charles Oliveira, the one that's not getting any respect from any of the lightweights for some strange reason. I'm trying to figure out why. And these guys know damn well how dangerous he is, so I have no idea where this is coming from. Gaethje did the interview and basically disrespected him again, saying that, you know, he didn't deserve to be fighting in that title fight and that Gaethje felt he should have been fighting Poirier in that title fight and all this other stuff and that he's not really the champion. Like, you know, a lot of prestige has been taken away from the belt since Oliveira won the belt. And I don't know what these guys are talking and going on with about that, but or what Gaethje's going on with about that, to be honest with you. But Gaethje, like, I see him getting choked out in that fight, man. I think Oliveira choked him out probably inside two rounds. So I don't even know why Gaethje is sounding so confident here. I'm not sure Gaethje could beat him. So I don't know what he's talking about with that. But how do you think about the Oliveira versus Dustin Poirier? That is, I keep hearing rumors that the fight is being worked on for December. How do you feel about the fight, you know, a couple months out?
Yeah, I want to say that the UFC wants to have that fight in December. And I'm on board with you, man. This Charles Oliveira hate is just really, really, it's really, really strong right now. It's like people are discrediting him, first of all. So I'm gonna flip it around. I'm gonna come off Oliveira real quick. Do you think they'll be talking the same stuff that Chandler would have won? They would have said Chandler isn't the true champ. You know, I don't think they would be doing this. Oliveira has done what he's supposed to do. He's fought his way up. He took his lumps on his way up. I just don't get it, bro. I just don't understand the hate. And Oliveira, only thing we do is we ask fighters to get better. Oliveira had zero to none in the striking department. But he could wrestle and submit everybody that he got in there with. So on the way, he worked on his striking to go along with his ground game. His striking isn't on the level of his ground game, but his striking is something to be respected. So for these guys to be out here shortchanging him and basically disrespecting him, I don't understand it. And I think if Poirier comes in there too confident, I think Oliveira could take him down and choke him out, as we saw Khabib do to Poirier. Khabib negated Dustin's striking, took him down, choked him out. And Oliveira is just as good on the mat. So all this Oliveira doubt and hate, it just needs to stop. Respect the man. He won the fights the UFC gave him. He did that. He beat Chandler for the belt. He didn't get a chance to fight Khabib. Do we think that maybe Khabib would have dominated him on the mat like Khabib did everybody else? We don't know. But at the same time, as Oliveira is probably one of the only guys in that division that can hang with Khabib on the mat. So I just don't understand it, bro. So if you have asked me today to pick a winner between Oliveira and Dustin Poirier, I probably would go Oliveira third round submission. That's what I would go with.
Over Poirier?
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean that's the way I'm leaning too. I just think that all these guys overlooking him is going to be all their downfalls. You know, that's really the problem. I think it's, you know, we've always said that, is that, like, you know, you look through your opponents and you end up paying for it. You know, you see it time and time again. Most of these guys that truly believe that they're already better than their opponent and they've already won the fight, they end up losing. And especially when you're fighting for a championship, like, you're fighting guys who are a lot better than what you're making them out to be. I mean, I think Poirier seems to, surprisingly, even Poirier is kind of looking through Oliveira, which, you know, that could very well be his downfall. Gaethje's looking through him. That could very well be his downfall. Who is this? There was somebody else that was talking. That'll be their downfall too. Anybody, pretty much anybody, that'll be their downfall. And you know what's funny about it? If you notice, the guys who aren't discounting Oliveira are the guys who have actually fought him. So if you look at it, Michael Chandler and Tony Ferguson, you know, when you ask either one of those guys about Oliveira, they're going to tell you how good he is. And they're going to tell you how he is a strong champion. He's a great champion. They will say that. You know, Ferguson gave Oliveira a lot of credit. After he lost to Oliveira, they sat next to each other at the press conference, and you saw Ferguson give Oliveira a lot of praise and a lot of respect at that press conference. And I bet you if they interviewed Ferguson, I'd actually like to see that. I'd like to see them interview Ferguson, you know, maybe Submission Radio or something like that, and ask him about Oliveira leading up to that fight. Guarantee you he'll tell Poirier, whoever, you know, to not underestimate Oliveira. He's a tough guy. And Chandler will say the same thing. Chandler got knocked out by him, you know, and Chandler gives him a lot of respect when you hear that. The only thing that Chandler came out with, I think, I don't know if it was Gaethje or Chandler, said that he expects Poirier to knock out Oliveira. I don't know which one of them said that. But in making all these predictions, it seems like all the guys, basically, who haven't fought him are the ones who have so much to say. The ones who have fought him are the ones that have so much respect. So that's probably what's coming for Poirier and Gaethje, unfortunately.
Man, that's a good point, bro. That's a great point that you made about how all the guys that haven't fought him are discrediting him, and all the guys that have fought him are giving him his props. That's a great, great point, man, because you don't know what you don't know. So all these guys that haven't fought him, they don't know. So, but at the same time, when you're a champ, man, you deserve a tad bit of respect. I ain't saying that you gotta kiss a champ's ass, but dog, the UFC just don't give out belts. I mean, they did get Aldo the lightweight belt when he came in elite, came into the UFC, but he was still the greatest lightweight over in WEC. So I mean, you know. But outside of that, they normally don't give away belts, bro. They make you earn them, and Oliveira earned that belt. So we done went over a little bit tonight. So any last words, bro?
No, I'm just putting out a tweet from our LKE Real Talk account right now. So if you're listening, go follow us at LKE Real Talk on Twitter. You know, we've been definitely getting more consistent. We're tweeting from the account. We tweet from it pretty damn consistently at this point. Always trying to put out content there. So, yeah, go follow us at LKE Real Talk. And, you know, thank you to anybody who listens to us. And have a great rest of your week.
Yeah, man, like Keith said, we've definitely been consistent here. Man, this is actually pretty good for us during the summer, because normally during summer we take time off in the summer, but we actually been pretty good this summer with you know, bringing content. Starting Friday, shameless plug, but it is our talk show. Friday is on the return of Three Bros Fantasy Football Show. That's Friday night at 9 Eastern, 7 Mountain. You know, that's something fun I like to do. And, you know, I love this. We got a lot of stuff coming up, Keys, this last quarter. This last quarter, man, is going to be exciting in MMA, man. And I'm looking forward to it. Everybody have a great weekend. Take care of yourself, social distance, wear your mask, and all that good stuff. Positive people, positive energy, a positive result. Boy, do I believe that. With that being said, we're always in the show with a peace.